Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's a wonderful privilege for my wife, Joan, and I to be with you this afternoon. And we are here because of the wonderful generosity of two most beautiful people that you'll ever meet. It is Mr. and Mrs. Dennis Luca. And when we saw them at the airport, they came to pick us up. It was just like coming home. And we love them so dearly, and we appreciate being with them. They have the best motel in Seattle. I mean, Mrs. Luca turns out some beautiful meals, and so we're enjoying their company very, very much. We've been greatly blessed because of their friendship of care and care, but I'd like to say a little bit more about our journey in life with them in the sermon today. It'll be all right. I'd like to thank Joan for the special music. Sometimes I think the special music is better than the sermon to follow. And Joan does such a fine job. Beautifully sung by a beautiful lady, but then I'm biased, aren't I? I thought it would be appropriate to bring you some news of the church in Australia. And first of all, I'd like to bring you greetings from about 650 brethren in our country. And to add just a little humour, I was going to bring you greetings from Paul Hogan of Crocodile Dundee fame and also Steve Irwin, the Crocodile Man, but I think most of you know of the tragic circumstances around his death, and I didn't think it was appropriate to bring any humour into that situation there. But just as a point of interest, Steve Irwin was responsible for the establishment of what they call the Australia Zoo. And a large number of our unique animals are actually displayed there. And thousands of people visit that zoo every week. Now, this year, the feast film is actually centered on the work in Australia and New Zealand. And Mr. Peter Eddington and Mr. Clay Thornton came down to gather footage for the feast film. And they actually went to Australia Zoo. And some of that footage of that particular zoo will be in the feast film. But when they were there, of course, we never thought that the man who established that was so alive. I often thought if I could practice my Christianity with the same enthusiasm as this man did for his vocation, I think I would probably be much more effective as a Christian. But anyway, some of that film footage they took at the zoo will be this year shown in the feast film. Now, as I mentioned before, I bring you greetings from around 650 wonderful brethren in Australia. The main concentration of our churches are on the east coast of the country, and we have a small congregation across on the western coast. We currently have about 17 congregations, and the furthest one north is about 2,000 miles from the congregation furthest south. What you may not have realized is that if you exclude Alaska, Australia is about the same size as, I think you'd call it, continental USA. It's about 3 million square miles. We have 20 million people. You've got, 300 million people? Basically, that's because in the center of Australia, there's a tremendous amount of desert. There's just no population there. And it restricts the population to the fertile eastern region mainly. We have 4 employed pastors, and they're supported by 9 local church elders. And of course, as you can understand, living in the United States, they cover an enormous area to visit and serve the brethren. And it's a similar situation, I think, to what you have here in the USA, where a lot of your pastors do travel considerable distances to take Sabbath services and also to visit when that necessary. And as you may know, one of our pastors is Mr. Bill Bradford. He and his wife, Jenny, they live in the city of Brisbane, which is the capital city of Queensland. That's where my wife and I live, on the Gold Coast, about 50 miles south of Brisbane. Mr. Bradford, he's the regional pastor of the state of Queensland. He's also the chairman of our pastoral committee and also a member of the National Council. But the state of Queensland itself, it's about 670,000 square miles. It's about double the size of Texas. And I was going to share with you a Texas joke, but I don't think I should do that, because the jokes I tell, we always come out on top. And I don't want you to be in times to come say, well, Reg Wright was here and I remember the Texas jokes, but I don't remember anything about his sermon. So, and if I say we came out on top, you're probably sitting there thinking of a Texas joke where you come out on top, so I won't tell you them. But maybe later or something like that. In the state of Queensland, it's very large. One of our congregations in Brisbane is in the very southeast corner of Queensland, where Mr. Bradford is. And our furthest congregation north is 500 miles to the north. Then there's some members and their families about 800 miles north of where Mr. Bradford is in Brisbane. And we have some people that need visiting about 1,000 miles to the north. So it's a huge area, great distances that you're familiar with here in the USA. I was the national office manager in Australia for some 10 years and retired from that employment about 18 months ago. Mr. Alan Hamilton is now our national office manager, and I was glad he came along because we need some younger men in that position. So I'm no longer employed by the church. I'm officially retired, but I don't think you ever retire from the church. I support Mr. Bradford in the Queensland region, and I do speak regularly in the seven congregations that are there. And I also take care of a small congregation some 400 miles south of our home in the neighbouring state of New South Wales, a place called Port Macquarie. And I try to get down there as much as I can, send them, you know, the tapes, DVDs and things like that, keep contact with them on the phone. I'm a member of our article review committee. I don't know if you're familiar with the fact that the articles for the Good News, the World News and Prophecy, Vertical Thought, those articles, when they're drafted and written by the writers, are sent by the editors around to the international areas. And we have Mr. Bill Eddington, who's the chairman of our national council, but also now he's a member of the Council of Elders. Mrs. Ruth Root, some of you may know her, and myself. We have a review team in Australia where when we take a look at the draft articles, we're very sensitive to some of the situations in our country and in other international areas where we have racial and religious tolerance laws. And so how an article is drafted needs to be carefully worded, because we can offend the Muslim world, the Islamic world, very, very easily. And under those laws, they can actually sue us if we step out of line. So we are able to give feedback on the articles that come through. And I must say that the writers do an excellent job, because every issue, you know, there's a new set of articles to be produced and the writers have to produce those articles. And I do have the greatest respect for those who write those articles. But we also are very pleased that we can review the articles and send feedback to the editors. I'm also a media advisor. My background is in media and publishing and mailing. And Mrs. Ruth Root is our media coordinator, and she has several people like you may know Mr. Roy Hickford and myself and a couple of others that she will actually contact us, and we give advice about our media activities in Australia. I'm also privileged to handle, you see, I was retired, but I was supposed to be retired. But one of the great joys of my life is that I handle all the personal correspondence that comes to the church where they're asking questions about the Bible or on Christian living, whether it's by letter or by email or it might come in from our website. And I must say that answering the many questions that people send in is a great joy for me. I just thrive on that particular service. And I've been involved in writing letters since about 1969 and formed many friendships throughout the whole of Australia and the Pacific region, the Southeast Asian region, right across to Tonga in the Pacific area, and then up through Papua New Guinea, Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand, Vietnam, Hong Kong, and across into India. And the friendships that I've developed through that correspondence still exist today. What was interesting last year, a lady from Singapore attended with us at Noosa, where our feast site is in Queensland, and she's a member of United, and she brought with her a letter that was written to her from the church in 1986, and it had my signature on it. And it was the very first letter that she'd ever received from the church. And I wasn't aware of that, and she showed me this letter. And I was greatly moved, and she said, "I have cherished that letter these many years." And it just goes to show you never know what you might do in the service of others. I'll have a little bit more to say about that later. Now, God has been very good to us in the work in Australia. We completely own our small but efficient national office. And I was the national office manager. I presented a program to the National Council to actually purchase the office rather than renting. Renting is very expensive. Not that you can't rent. Rent can be a way of doing it. But if you can own your own building, pay it off, it becomes an asset. You don't have to pay high rents. And that was following the example of Mr. Luca when he was in Australia, where it was under his leadership that the office was built in Australia. And it became, I believe, one of the finest international offices in the world in the sense of its presentation. And also there were about 30 staff which actually served not only Australia but the Pacific region and also into Southeast Asia. And I took an example from him and felt that we should purchase the office, which we did. We now own it, and it's become a very fine asset. And how we actually came to achieve the purchase of that office is another story, which I can't tell you right now because I think we're going to run out of time fairly quickly. But I'd love to share that story with you because it's God who provides. It's always God who takes you through the doors. He opens the doors, and sometimes they're quite miraculous. Our annual income is around the $1 million mark, and this pays for most of our expenses, but I have to say this, that we can't go it without the support of the brethren in the United States. And I want to say thank you to all of you for your generosity. All of the literature that is published here and produced is sent to the international areas, and we receive that free of charge. And that's a wonderful blessing, and I truly want to thank our brethren in the United States for your generosity, because it enables us to preach the gospel. And it's something that we must always consider your generosity and be continually grateful. Now, our goal is to someday become self-supporting, but we're a little way off of that. Now, we're currently distributing about 22,000 copies of the Good News magazine, also Vertical Thought, also World News and Prophecy, and the US United News. But in July this year, we actually began to print the Good News magazine in Australia for Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa. What was happening, the Good News was printed in the United States, and the quantity that we need was air freighted to Australia. And in recent times, air freighting has gone through the roof in costs. And we found by printing locally, we could actually bring the cost of the magazine printing down. And Mr. Peter Eddington was very happy about that. So that's what we're doing at the present time. And hopefully that will continue. In years gone by, in the Worldwide Church of God, we were printing something like 250,000, a quarter of a million copies of The Plain Truth every month, and distributing that throughout Australia and Southeast Asia. We're a long, long way from that figure. But we don't know what God has in mind, so you can't just sit back and not do. You must move forward, and God will guide us in with the finances and also whether or not he will open the doors. Now, we produce the Australian United News. This is the editor of this publication is Mrs. Ruth Root. It's printed in duo tones, not in full colour, just to keep the cost down. And it's primarily filled with human interest articles. And what I look upon this is it's a history of the church and work in Australia. And it's very, very important as a communication tool for our brethren. For example, in here there's an article. It's got the 47th Feast of Tabernacles in Australia. A Walk Down Memory Lane by John Lyons. Now, Mr. Lyons is one of our senior citizens. I dearly love our senior citizens, being one myself. But he was at the very first Feast of Tabernacles in 1960 in Australia. And there's a photograph here with the Sydney Harbour Bridge as the backdrop of all those at that first feast. And Mr. Gerald Waterhouse was the regional director at that point of time. There's also an article in here that I wrote myself about the 10th anniversary of our office opening, and I wanted to be able to put into the magazine a history of how that office came to be, and to give God the honor and glory of doing that, because it becomes a history, because as we grow older, we will pass on. I would like younger generations to be able to read this and to know how God himself instigated and brought these things to pass. So that's a wonderful tool for the brethren in Australia. I'd like to mention just a couple of more things, and I think we're able to stay here till 3 o'clock, is that right? Or do we have... I think I'll shorten the sermon this a bit later. But I come from Australia. How many times do I have opportunity to speak to you about what is happening in our country? And to share that with you, I greatly appreciate that, even if that's only all that I do. So there are a couple of more things I just want to mention. Several years ago, an elder, Mr. Stephen Clark, and he actually gives the sermon for the feast film this year. He and I, we got together and we generated 20 questions for each of the Bible study lessons. Each question has four answers, and there's only one answer that is correct. And the questions, the 20 questions for each lesson is printed on one side of a sheet of paper, and the answers are on the other side. Whenever we send a lesson out, the question sheet goes in with it, and it's a self-evaluation exercise. The person, after they've done the lesson, can actually go through and tick off what they think are the right answers for the 20 questions, turn it over and check to see if they have them right. It's just a self-evaluation. Well, recently we're able to make the Bible study course quiz interactive on the website, where we've got people who go online, they study the lessons online, they don't get a hard copy. And so we're able to put that on the computer. And if you ever want to have a quick look at that, if you go to www.ucg.org.au, meaning Australia, and click on the literature tab and go down to the Bible study course, and there's a synopsis of each lesson, and on the side is a little word review. Click on that and it'll take you to the quiz of that particular lesson, and you can go through and say, oh, I'll take that as the answer to the first question, and it'll give you a tick, and if you're wrong it'll put an X. And at the end of the 20, it'll give you how many you got right or wrong. Now, they're very simple, but we believe that it's an appropriate way to help Good News readers who go online to read the and study the lessons. Our young people can use it. Young people love computers. It's the age of computers, iPods, and what was the other one, a Nano? Nano or something. I learned that yesterday. I never heard of a Nano before, but... It's a small iPod, anyway. So, but our young people are, this is the way they are. They like to go on computers. And so we're able to make that interactive on the website, and I think that's going to be very helpful to us. Now, last thing I just want to mention, if you'll bear with me, is that when it comes to religion, there is a considerable difference between the culture here and in Australia. Your country was founded on religious freedom, and you're very comfortable talking about religion or attending church, or, you know, if you're sitting in the plane and there's somebody beside you and they find that you go to the church, the other person say, well, what church? Oh, I might know somebody from that church. You never do that in Australia. Religion is a very private and personal thing. We were flying from Los Angeles to Seattle on this trip to come up to Mr. and Mrs. Luca. And my wife wanted a glass of water. You can't even take a bottle of water on the flight, you know that. But my wife wanted a glass of water. And the air hostess, she saw where Joan was. She went away, and the cabin lights were dimmed at that point. And when she came back, she came up the aisle. She forgot where Joan was sitting. And she went past us, and when she turned around, I just put my hand up. And she came back and said, oh, yes. She said, you know, she said, it's just like being in church. She said, you know, you get up from the pew and you go off somewhere, and when you come back, you can't find where you were seated. And it was such a natural, easy comment. You'd never say that in Australia. They would never use the church as an example. It's a different culture. And American religion, there's a great suspicion of American religion. The televangelists have come down there and done a very, very good job of turning Australians away from religion. After people have been in it for a while, they catch on and find out they're being ripped off. But so when the United Church of God comes on the scene in Australia, they might get the Good News magazine and they will see that it's published in the United States. And they're very, very careful. They're very, very hesitant. And so what we have to do, we have to establish the church's integrity and trust. These are two key pillars. They must trust us. We must have integrity. When we advertise the literature, we always say it's free of charge. There is no obligation and there's no follow-up on everything to give them a comfort zone. Well, if I write away for this and there is a follow-up, I can take them to court if they want. You could do that. And on all of our advertising, then you gradually build trust. Then they find that, they're keeping to this. They are. They're keeping their word. And so your integrity builds, and that's the only way we can do it. And so our cultural difference, religious-wise, is different to the United States. But with your help, we're able to preach the gospel down there, and we are moving into that position quite well. Well, I could continue to rave on about the work in Australia because it's been my love, my life for many, many decades. But I thank you for the opportunity of sharing that little bit of news about the work in Australia. As I move into the sermon, you'll be astonished at what I'm going to talk about. There was absolutely no collaboration with Mr. Hardinson at all. In 1972, my wife and I had the privilege of serving the brethren in Malaysia at the very first full Feast of Tabernacles. There was a three-day feast in 71, but in 1972, my wife and I, we went up to Kuala Lumpur, the capital city of Malaysia, and we held the first feast there in the Federal Hotel. And then a couple of years later, we were up there again at the feast, and the feast site had been moved to Port Dickson, which is on the Strait of Malacca. And in those days, it was the custom of the church to hold a talent show. Some of you who have been in the church a long time probably understand what a talent show is. It's where people who have some talent, whether they can sing, whether they can play an instrument, tell a skit, all get together and produce a talent show for the evening. And at the feast there, I think it was about 1974, I had the responsibility of organizing the talent show for the evening. And you always have a rehearsal, a day or two beforehand. And I was sitting down in the hall here, and the rehearsal was going on, and I was taking notes. And a Chinese lady came and sat down beside me. Her name is Mrs. Lim Ton Lok, and she comes from Jakarta in Indonesia. What struck me was the absolutely wonderful attitude of this lovely lady. She said to me, "Mr. Wright, would you teach me God's way of life?" And I was quite astonished, because this lady, she did hold an executive position in a very large company. Her husband was 90% blind. She supported him and her family. She's very well qualified. She's very well educated. She lives in Jakarta, where there was no Sabbath services, very few visits from the ministry. In other words, she had to go it alone. I said to Mrs. Lim, I said, "I have need to be taught by you," because this is the respect I had for this lady. And she said to me in such a wonderful attitude, "Mr. Wright, would you teach me God's way of life?" Her personal example has remained with me until this day. And that's what I want to talk about, the power of personal example And I didn't collude with Mr. Hardinson. I was quite intrigued by the fact that his message is basically the same as what I want to talk to you today, the power of personal example. I'd like to share with you another true story. We had a senior citizen that attended the feast, and this lady, she was an older lady, and so had some health difficulties. And she was telling me about what she thought was an outstanding example of Christian conduct at the feast. The service was over, you know, after you're sitting for a couple of hours and you're a senior citizen, you know, the hips don't work too well, you know. And there was a young man with his wife walking past her. And she said, she stopped him, she knew him by name, and she called him by name. She said, "Could you just help me get up out of the chair? Give me a little bit of a lift." He said, "Of course." So he helped her up. And then he took her arm and he actually took her out to the front of the auditorium and saw her into the car, you know, and made sure she was safe. And she said, "Well, you know, thank you very, very much." He said, "No," he said, "I want to thank you." And she said, "What for?" He said, "For giving me the opportunity to look after you, to serve you." And she never forgot that. He was a young man who actually was happy to serve, and the opportunity came and he took it. We should never underestimate the power of personal example. Now, there's plenty of bad examples. Today, I want to talk a little bit about godly example. And if you'll bear with me, I want to share with you a little of a chapter in the life of my wife, Joan, and I. It's one we will never forget. It was mentioned before, I was the national office manager in Australia with United for the last 10 years. But prior to that, I actually worked in church administration in the Worldwide Church of God since 1967. And I was with them for about 28 years. And in 1972, an event took place which changed the course of our lives forever. Mr. and Mrs. Dennis Luker came to Australia, and he was designated as the regional director. We had no idea of the consequences that would happen to our lives following their arrival. Because it was under his leadership and his wife that my wife and I were given opportunities far, far all our expectations. And the church in recent years has focused on the subject of servant leadership. Well, my wife and I saw and observed and experienced servant leadership by Mr. and Mrs. Luker back in 1972 and the years that followed. Servant leadership is leading through service. It's leading by example, godly example. And it was through their servant leadership in Australia that my wife and I had opportunity to grow ourselves and then go on and serve others. And we have wonderful opportunities in our years to serve others and help them in their Christian lives. You know, the church, or a church, a group may preach the truth, but if the culture is not based on servant leadership, on godly love, it will cripple the members spiritually, or it will fail to lift and fail to inspire the members to reach their potential. You know, the Pharisees had the truth, but Christ condemned them. Why was that? Well, you've only got to read Matthew chapter 23, and you'll see that the Pharisees did not lead by example. They said, "Do this," and they laid unnecessary burdens on the people. And the core value of God's church is summarized in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, isn't it? This is the way God lives. This is the way God is. This is the way he thinks. They're wonderful qualities that God has. And that's the way we are to be as God's people. And at the beginning of the sermon, I mentioned that in 1972, my wife and I were at the first feast in Malaysia. Now, why were we there? It's because those over us expressed confidence in us that we could do the job. And my wife and I rose to that challenge. In 1969, I began to write to the people in Malaysia and Singapore because there had been baptizing tours through those countries by various ministers, and those members had no pastor, so they'd write to, primarily it was Mr. Wayne Cole, who was the regional director at that point of time. Now, to assist Mr. Cole, he asked me then to write the letters to these members, but it always went out, he would actually vet the letters and it would go out under his signature. So I became familiar with something like 70 of our brethren in that region by name. I identified with their problems, and there's some difficulties up there, especially with the Sabbath. It's different to our countries. You know, the Sabbath is a great challenge to them up there. So I began to identify with these people by name and their challenges, and I used to answer their questions. And then in 1972, when the first feast was there, Mr. Lucas said, I want you and Joan to go up there. And for the first time, I was able to put a face to the names that I was writing to. And that's when we forged some very fine friendships, which are still with us to this day. They're longtime members of the church. Some of those attend the United Church of God. And it was because of the leadership and the example set by Mr. and Mrs. Luca that my wife and I were able then to set an example to these people and help them in their Christian life. I was able to lead by personal, godly example. And that's why my wife and I dearly love and respect Mr. and Mrs. Luca, because of the example that they set to us. So never underestimate the power of godly example. It's more powerful than just words. It's more powerful than all the sermons that you could speak. A sermon given by somebody with no credibility is basically powerless to motivate people. But a sermon given by somebody who has inculcated that type of service and that attitude in their lives, when they speak, then people are moved to follow the example. They're moved by the words. That is what Jesus Christ did. And he never asked us to do what he was not willing to do for himself. And again, we should never underestimate the power of your personal example in your family, in your community, in place where you work. Now, I need to say that Mr. and Mrs. Luca are not perfect. When they came to Australia, they were fundamentally deficit in one particular area of their lives. And this is where my wife and I, especially my wife, we were able to make a significant contribution to their lives. You see, when they came to Australia, they couldn't make a good hot cup of tea. I mean, they used to make this lukewarm, insipid stuff. We call it Laodicean tea. You know, it's the kind of tea you take one sip and say, oh, yuck. It's neither hot nor cold. And I have to say this in all honesty, that their conversion to making good tea was absolutely profound. If you've never tried one of Mr. and Mrs. Lucas' cups of tea, you are in for a treat when you do, because they do make a wonderful cup of tea, and that was our contribution to them. And that's why we enjoy their company so much, because we talk so much over a nice hot cup of tea. I want to give you another example. This is not an individual example. This is an example of the church as a whole, something that happened in my lifetime in our previous association. It's a real life example of what happened to the church collectively. It was in the early 1980s. I was the mail processing manager, and we needed to actually contract the service of a mailing house to actually mail out the magazine and do some of the bulk mailing that was quite large in its volume. And we eventually chose a mailing house called Dependable Mailing House. And I grew to really appreciate the directors of that company. They were very capable and honest people. Now, their organization grew over a period of time, and so they built new premises. And when those new premises were dedicated, they asked one of the politicians, Sir William Knox, to come along and to give the opening address. And they invited a representative of all their clients, and I went along representing the Worldwide Church of God. And when I got there, one of the directors came over and greeted me, and then he took me to a group of men that were standing together, and I didn't know any of those men. And so, but we said hello, you know, in the normal formality, and then the gentleman next to me, he looked at the tag and it had Reg Wright, Worldwide Church of God, and he said, oh, you're from the Worldwide Church of God, and I said, yes. He said, oh, I'm from the Blind Institute. He said, you people used to hire out our hall, and we did. It was in South Brisbane, and it had an unusual cooling system. It was what they call punka, P-U-N-K-A. I don't know if you've heard that word, but there are like blinds or curtains hanging from the roof on long poles, and these poles are connected. And then in India or those places, they would have a servant, and it's connected by a rod, and the servant would go like this, and these curtains would go backwards and forwards, moving the air. It's called punka, P-U-N-K-A. Well, the Blind Institute had punkas on the ceiling of this room where we used to meet. Only they had electric motor on it. You know, they put a wheel on it, electric motor. There was no servant doing that. So you press the button and these curtains would go backwards and forwards. And about 3:30 in the afternoon, and the minister's going on, you know, it's a hot afternoon, and, you know, and this movement overhead, it just sort of sent you into a beautiful afternoon siesta, you know. It was, I can remember it. Hot afternoon, you know, and these movement like this overhead, the minister's droning on, you know, long sermons and that. And I remember that hall very well. But back to the story, when he said that, he said, you people, you know, he said, you people, it was a hired our hall. I thought, hello, what is he going to say next? And what he did say, he said, I was always so very impressed by the way you looked after the hall. And I thought, well, what a compliment. He remembered us, you know, the chairs were put back, the floor was looked after, it was swept, it was clean, everything was locked up. They trusted us. And whenever I have the opportunity, I do want to express appreciation to all of the work that goes on. See, my wife and I, and Mr. and Mrs. Luca, we walked in today, podium's up, the PA system's going, you know, and the chairs are out, and the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes, and then after we leave, now I used to do that. I used to set up all the chairs and things like that, so I know what happens in the process. But when we leave, then there are men and women who actually clean the hall up, and we leave it in a good condition. And I think that is very appropriate, it's very commendable, and I'm sure that God is very well pleased. So here was the church collectively had set a fine example. And 20 years down the line, the man had remembered it. Of course, it was Jesus Christ who set the perfect example. And my wife sang that song, The Greatest Among Us, and the words are absolutely beautiful because it does elevate Jesus Christ into that position. Because he did serve, didn't he? He was down to the very nitty-gritty of life. He lived as we lived. He didn't ask us to do anything more than whatever he did. And so he did set the greatest example. I want to mention to you what I believe is one of the most outstanding examples that Christ set. Now, when you read what the miracles that Christ did, I mean, you stand in awe of the stilling the storm or raising the dead or healing the sick, and these were all done with great power and great authority, and you stand in awe of those. But I want to refer you to an example that I believe is even more outstanding than all of that. And if you turn with me to John chapter 19, John chapter 19, I'd like to begin in verse 23. John 19, verse 23. Then the soldiers, when they had crucified Jesus, took his garments and made four parts, to each soldier a part, and also the tunic. Now the tunic was without seam, woven from the top in one piece. They said therefore among themselves, let us not tear it, but cast lots for it, whose it shall be. that the scripture might be fulfilled, which says, they divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. Therefore the soldiers did these things. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother, and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing by, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." Then he said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that hour, that disciple took her to his own home. This is one of the most outstanding examples that I know of. He was Christ. He was on that stake. He was suffering the most horrendous of all deaths, death by crucifixion. His body was racked with pain. He was nearing death. Yet here, he was still able to look down on his mother and have love and concern for her and take care of her. And he said, "John, take Mum and look after her." You know, what happens to us at times when we're hurting, our mind becomes completely focused on ourselves. Now, it's certainly not wrong to take care of pain when we have difficulties in that way, when we suffer. That's the correct thing to do. But sometimes our discomfort becomes so overwhelming in our thinking, it consumes us, that it sometimes prevents us from having concern for others who are also hurting. And yet here was Christ, his body in tatters, waves of pain just flowing over him, yet he had the discipline, the presence of mind to think away from himself and take care of his mother. I think this is one of the most outstanding examples. He could have called on 12 legions of angels. He had the power and authority to do that. But he didn't do that. He chose, in that maelstrom of the awesome crucifixion, to take care of his mother. And I think that is an absolutely fabulous example. And it's one that I would like to emulate. I would like to be like that. I know I'm a long way from that, but that's an example I would like to follow, to be able to do that, to have a mind that's away from yourself where you can take care of others. I'd like to give one more example. I have 15 more examples, but I'll just cut. I'll give one more example from the Bible, which is, again, an outstanding example to me personally. And I need to go back to Daniel chapter 9. If you'll turn with me to Daniel chapter 9. And the example is actually set in verses 3 through 19. But for sake of time, I will just read a few verses down and pick out the salient points. Beginning in verse 3 of Daniel chapter 9. And Daniel said, he said, "Then I set my face towards the Lord God to make request by prayer and supplications with fasting, sackcloth and ashes. And I prayed to the Lord my God and made confession and said, O Lord, great and awesome God, who keeps his covenant and mercy with those who love him and with those who keep his commandments." Now I want you to notice verse 5. He said, "We have sinned and committed iniquity. We have done wickedly and rebelled, even by departing from your precepts and your judgments." And I'd like to drop down to verse 8. "O Lord, to us belongs shame of face, to our kings, our princes, and our fathers, because we have sinned against you." And now dropping down to verse 15, if you read the whole prayer, there's a lot more in it, but I want to emphasize a certain thing here. Verse 15, "And now, O Lord God, who brought your people out of the land of Egypt with a mighty hand and made yourself a name as it is this day, we have sinned. We have done wickedly." And it goes on where he entreats God. Do you know what is the outstanding aspect of that prayer? He said, "We have sinned." He identified with his people. He did not say they sinned. He said, "God," he said, "we have sinned." He loved his people, the nation of Judah actually, but he loved his people so much that he said, in that prayer he cried to God, he said, "We have sinned." He identified with his people, and he was a sinner, he knew that. But I'm sure there's a lot more wickedness out there in his country, in his nation. And I wonder sometimes, do I look upon my people in Australia and do I say that because of what is going on, do I identify with those people? Do I pray to God, we have sinned? Or do I say, oh, they're sinning, God. You know, you've got to deal with them. I think Daniel's personal prayer is an absolute wonderful example of the way that we should pray for our people and express our love for our people. Even though they're doing the wrong thing, he prayed to God. He said, we have sinned. It's a powerful personal prayer by Daniel, which to me, it's moving, it's instructive, and it's a wonderful example of how we should pray. I did have another example in here, but I think we should, it was another wonderful example. I'd like you to turn with me to Matthew 5:16 as we bring the sermon to a close. Matthew 5:16. It says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify you on earth. No, I didn't say that. Sorry. No, I didn't say that. Let me read that again. Didn't say that at all, did it? No, I didn't say that right, did I? I got that wrong. What I'm saying, who does it say you glorify? Is it to glorify us? What I was trying to say is that I twisted the scripture to say, well, the glory comes to us because we're letting our light shine. But it says that we are to glorify our Father in heaven. The glory goes to him. It doesn't say that we get the glory. We let our light shine before the people that God may be glorified. And it may be right away, it may be 5 years, 10 years, like 20 years down the line when the man from the Blind Institute remembered the example that the church set. It may be over a much longer period of time. It may not be till the millennium or to the great white throne judgment period. Now let's turn to 1 Peter 2, verses 11 and 12. First Peter 2, verses 11 and 12. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation. In the day of visitation, it could be this year, it may be 10 years, it may be 20 years, it might be 50 years, it might be in the millennium, it might be in the great white throne judgment period, but at some point of time, God will actually reach out and touch their mind and they'll come to understand his way of life. And they might think back, oh, I remember, put your name there, I remember this person. Now I understand, now I see their example. We are to be lights in the world. And the purpose is to glorify God in the day of visitation, which will eventually come upon all people. And in Daniel 12, we won't have to go there, but Daniel 12, it talks about those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. Wouldn't you like to be able to set such a personal, godly example that you could turn others towards righteousness and have some impact on the lives of people by what you are, by what the way you are, the way you live, living a godly life. We must never underestimate the power of our personal godly example, because you may be instrumental in turning somebody towards God and helping them in their personal life and helping them to come to love God as you do. So I think I'll stop there at this point and set the example of not going over time too long. But I have appreciated very, very much in sharing some news about the church in Australia, and also speaking to you about the power of personal example. So let's all continue to set a godly example, because we have the two greatest people in the entire universe setting us the greatest example of all, and that's God the Father and Jesus Christ.